Today's topic is messy church. And honestly, when you hear that term, several things are going to come to your mind. And probably for most of you, the idea is thinking of things in the church that shouldn't be there. Things that, bulletins left in the pews, trash left where they shouldn't be, clutter in rooms that shouldn't be. And that's the kind of messy that most of us think about. But my messy is a little bit different. And some of it's not all that bad, as we're going to see. But first, I have to tell you about a church that decided that sin was getting to be out of line, and they needed to do something about it. So this church decided to have a Sunday where, you know, if you practiced sin last week, you should stay home. One of the parishioners got to thinking about it all week and realized that, yeah, I did sin this week, and I probably do qualify, so I probably better not go to church this Sunday. So he didn't, and about midweek the next week, he sees the pastor. He says, kind of humbly comes up and goes, "Pastor, I suppose by now you noticed I wasn't there last Sunday. Just curious, how many were there?" Pastor shrugs his shoulders and goes, "I have no idea. I wasn't there either." There's a pastor out in California. His name is Paul Shepherd. He's a black guy. He speaks Ebonics real clearly. And for those of you who do not know what Ebonics is, it's the way black folks spoke back and forth to themselves. And he's got a saying that I really love. He says, "There ain't no future in frontin'." For us white folks, that means you can pretend all you want. It's not going to get you anywhere. And I kind of like that because so often in church, we do a lot of frontin'. We do a lot of pretending. And I think as churches, we got to believe that since we're called to be one body, one spirit, and of one mind, that things should go pretty smoothly. There should never be any disagreements. There really should never be any differences of opinions. And that really, if it was done right, it would just be a peaceful, quiet place, wouldn't it? Of course, most of you realize that you've never seen a church like that. And there's a few folks that think, well, my church is the only church like that, that isn't like that. Well, I got good news for you. They're all like that. They're all a little bit dysfunctional in that respect. We all disagree. We all do have our differences of opinions. And I'll be honest with you, some of that may not be all bad. I did some research. I've talked about this in Sunday school one time. The different denominations should tell us that we have some differences of opinions. And I said in Sunday school that there are like 40,000 different Protestant denominations. Well, I did a little Google search to make sure that that was accurate. Turns out it was not. And it depends on who you talk to. There are either 50,000 Protestant denominations or as few as 9,000. You see, we can't even agree on how much we disagree. We are a group of people who like to disagree with each other. And occasionally, when we disagree, we decide the best way to do it is to go our separate ways and find somebody that agrees with us. Well, there's only one problem with that. You're never going to find those people. And if you look back, the church in Acts was kind of a dysfunctional group. They didn't agree. One of the greatest writers of the New Testament, a guy named Paul, had a falling out with a guy named Barnabas over a guy named John Mark. And it got so severe that they divided their ways. That shouldn't happen, but it did. If you go back even further, you look at Jesus' disciples, 12 men picked by God to be his people on earth. It's almost like Jesus decided to pick the worst group of people he could imagine. Fishermen, uneducated, rough around the edges, likely to be outspoken, and Peter was certainly outspoken. People who would not communicate well, or you go to the other extreme and you have guys like Matthew and Levi who were tax collectors. And we all love tax collectors, don't we? I mean, he just really went out of his way to pick people that wouldn't fit good people skills. Honestly, the only good one out of the bunch was a guy named Judas Iscariot. And he didn't end so well, did he? So we have this delusion that says we should all get along. We should all agree. And the truth of it is, we've never gotten along. We've never completely agreed. And I'm here to suggest that perhaps that's not all bad. Because you see, sometimes in our disagreements, we can become a little bit better than we are. So here we are, we've got a church that full of people that disagree with me, full of people that have different opinions than me. And how am I supposed to deal with this? Because some of these people are really annoying. And I'm going to get honest with you. I've been in church for most of my life, and I've met some very annoying people. And I've learned one annoying fact about annoying people. And psychiatrists tell you that the people who annoy you the most are the ones the most like you. And that's the most annoying fact I've ever heard. I don't like the fact that the people who annoy me are so much like me. But it's true, and it's a part of life that I've got to accept, that the folks that will get on my nerves are probably a lot like me, probably a little too much like me, and that's why I happen to get on their nerves and they happen to get on mine. So it's not an accident that God put us all together, not to get on each other's nerves, but to learn how we can get along when we are getting on each other's nerves, to learn how to deal with people who are not necessarily making me feel good about myself at this time, or them. It's interesting to me when you look at a discussion or a disagreement or anything of that nature, and if you don't think there are disagreements in the church, decide to paint something, move something, or Lord forbid, change a prelate. We just spent, I never even thought that this was going to follow the monthly meeting where we had that discussion of what should we do up front here. And oh my, have we had some discussion on that? What's the right answer? What's the wrong answer? What should we do? What shouldn't we do? Those are all good questions. Don't expect me to answer them. I'm as far out of that picture as I can get, because honestly, it's a discussion we're going to have. It's a discussion we're going to have, and we're going to have to do it in a Christ-like manner. If we don't, we're not going to be doing our jobs as Christians. And what does it mean to be a Christ-like manner? Well, you know, most of us do pretty good at trying not to offend others. I would say most of us do very good at trying not hard to offend others. But a great philosopher once said that one should try as hard to not be offended as one tries to not be offensive. That great philosopher, you may have heard of him. His name is Neil Martin. Which proves you do not have to be dead. You do not have to be dead to be a great philosopher. The truth is, most of us try hard not to be offensive. But we don't work quite as hard at not being offended. And I'll be honest with you, over my years, I've been treated offensively in many ways. I was a police officer. You can imagine, I've dealt with a few offensive statements in my life. It is not going to change how the other person acts by my action. It is going to change, however, my response to their action. If I decide that if you're offensive to me and I shall get back in your face and I shall be equally offensive back to you, we've just created a wall and a void that is going to not disappear soon. If what you say to me is offensive and I say, well, I don't understand what he's saying or she's saying. Perhaps I'm misunderstanding it. Perhaps they don't mean it the way they do, or perhaps they do mean it that way. But if I choose not to be offended, what will that change about the way I relate to them? What will it change the way I relate to everybody else? Because I don't care who you are, somebody gets in your face and offends you, your next interaction with another human being is very rarely pleasant, isn't it? How do you know that you've just had a bad day or someone else has had a bad day by the next interaction they have? They're already pre-primed to be grumpy. They're already ready for an altercation. How I respond to another person's offense will determine how I respond to everybody else that I meet that day. And I'll be honest with you, some of those offenses and some of those difference of opinions are kind of necessary. I've been in a lot of monthly meetings, and I'm a transplanted Baptist, and a couple of us transplanted Baptists have had this conversation. Coming to a Quaker monthly meeting from a Baptist business meeting is quite a shock. Baptists are usually the one of the things the loudest and the most always win the argument. In Quakers, we talk, and we talk, and we talk, and we talk, and we talk. And after we've talked for 2 hours, we said, maybe we should table this and talk some more next time. And as a Baptist, I'm going, please, just make a decision. Anything. I don't care. Let's get out of here. It's taken a while to appreciate that thing. The Quakers do want to take the time to hear the Holy Spirit speak through all the voices. And some of you have been in more monthly meetings than I have, and you've probably witnessed this truth more than I have. But how many of you have heard two differing opinions at a monthly meeting, both feeling they're right, both being completely opposite in their thinking, and both pretty sure that the other is wrong? Abraham Lincoln had a statement about that kind of attitude. Back in the Civil War, both the North and the South believed they were fighting for God. They believed it firmly, by the way. They both were sure they were doing God's will. And Abraham Lincoln came up with a very astute observation. He says, when two opposing sides both believe they are fighting for God, one must be, but both could be, wrong. As a Christian, I have to be responsible to realize that when I differ in opinion, one of us is wrong. That's no question about that. But it's also equally true, both of us could be wrong. And how many of you have sat through a monthly meeting that after two opposing views were discussed, and after the rest of the meeting had their input, and we heard what we thought was a consensus, somewhere between those two views, we came to a feeling of going, yeah, that would work. That would work. Now, maybe it's a meeting of futility after 3.5 hours of discussion. I don't know. But we Quakers do tend to come to that point where two opposing sides occasionally find out that neither one of them was correct, that somewhere in the middle probably is the right answer. And I think God put us together for that reason. We need the discussion. We need sometimes the disagreement. We need to make sure that all voices are heard. You know, that's a phrase that I've heard off and on many, many times, that occasionally in the church, folks feel like they have not been heard. It's not that they didn't speak up. They didn't feel that somebody was listening when they did speak. And honestly, can that happen? Yeah, it can. But more often than not, what has happened is the disagreement was already set so well in stone that even though they were heard, the other side had already made their decision and already come with a comeback, and we'd already decided that that was the wrong answer. And so we treat them like they were not heard. I think there's a danger in that. And that's what makes a messy church, is when we cannot disagree, when we cannot come together and find out between all of our beliefs and all of our structures where we do agree. Because there is a solid foundation of Christianity. And in all this openness and listening, I'm not here to suggest to you that we as Christians should be open to any and every idea that comes down the pike. Because that's not true. As Christians, we have a true and clear guideline of what God wants out of us. And not every idea is a godly idea. Not every idea should be embraced. Not every idea should be listened to and worked on. Sometimes we do need to disagree, but realize that that is not biblical. So we got to go with the fact that it is hard. And you know, there's a story about three pastors who went out after coffee, after a revival in their town. And they were all having coffee and they were all feeling pretty good. The one pastor was smiling. He says, well, we did pretty good this weekend. We got two new couples in our church out of this revival meeting. The other pastor was smiling a little bigger, and he goes, well, that's pretty good, but we got four new couples. And he was smiling even bigger, and the third pastor was sitting there just grinning from ear to ear. And I go, well, from the looks of you, you guys must have done really well. And he goes, yeah, we lost six of the biggest troublemakers in our church. There's a saying that says we all bless the church. Some when we enter, some when we leave. We should endeavor to make sure that we're not the ones that bless the church when we leave. We should endeavor to be of loving people. We should endeavor to realize that yes, we will have differences. Yes, we will disagree. And some of those disagreements will get quite vocal. That's not all bad. Because sometimes the discussion needs to happen. Sometimes we need to realize that our point of view does not necessarily constitute God's supreme knowledge. You know, if you want to scare me, and I've had a person tell me this, if you want to know God's will, just ask me. I can tell you. I'm here to tell you. I'm a pastor. I do not have that divine light that says, in all situations, here's my will, here's not my will. I have to search for that just like you and everyone else has to search for God's will. And sometimes that search requires us to have discussion. You know, I've talked about messy. And the one messy that really is kind of hard, it drives people away. That negative, that critical, that person that says it's my way or the highway. And you can always tell that person because whenever we're talking about them, the word love will never be the first word that comes to your mind. And those are sad people because as a Christian, love should be one of the first things that come to mind. And it talks about a story of a hog farmer who was living in a community where a new pastor showed up, and the new pastor tried to go out and convert this guy to come to church. The guy says, "Nah, I don't think so. I know too many people in your church. They're hypocrites. They're people, you know, this so-and-so down the road. They live just exactly like I do. There's no difference between him and me." Pastor did several visits trying to convince this guy that, give him a chance, you know, just give him a chance. Well, no, this hog farmer was not. The hog farmer's name was Frank. Hog farmer said, "No, just too many hypocrites in that church. I want nothing to do with that church." So the priest said, "Okay, I'll give up. But I do want to buy a hog from you." "Hey, no problem. I got tons of hogs. I've got really good quality. This is a good hog farmer." Go out through and he shows him this prime stuff. This stuff's ready for the state fair. These hogs are beautiful. And he goes, no. He finally gets down to one bunch and there's a little runt of a pig. So I believe I'll take that one. "You don't want that one, Pastor. That's a runt. He'll never amount to nothing. He's no good for eating. He's just a runt. He's worthless." Nope, that's the one I want. Let's load him on my truck." As soon as I got him loaded on the truck, Pastor says, "See, what I'm going to do is I'm going to drive all around the county, and I'm going to say, this is a hog that I bought from Frank. And this is kind of an indication of what Frank was, kind of a hog farmer is." And Frank goes, "That's not fair. You've looked at thousands of my hogs that were 10 times better than this, and you picked the worst bunch, and you want him to represent me?" And he goes, "Hey, if it's fair for the church, it's fair for the farm." We do that a little bit, don't we? We want to judge by the worst of our worst. We go in and we see something wrong and we go, church, that's not for me. There's people in there that aren't nice people. Yeah, I suppose there are. That's always going to be the case. But, you know, it's just a matter of seeing past that messy to seeing another messy that we definitely need to see. And would you believe that? I turned one page upside down. You know, when you look at messy, the kind of messy I want to see is the kind of messy that says, "Look, we're going to disagree. We're going to disagree occasionally, sometimes very, very vehemently." I'll be honest with you. I've been the clerk of ministry and council on numerous occasions. I've been it on yearly meeting. And I've made the comment, and everyone always laughs when I say it. It's the one time I was not trying to be funny. But the only time I'm truly scared is when everyone agrees with me. Honestly, you cannot run a meeting where everyone agrees and have everybody thinking that the Holy Spirit is speaking to them. We are different for a reason. We should come to a unified decision. We should come to a point where we feel comfortable. But the truth of the matter is, occasionally we need the disagreement. Occasionally we need the discussion to make it to that point where we are literally living Christ's life. The matter is, how do we deal with the discussion? How do we deal with the disagreements? How do we get into a point where our messy church is not a destructive messy, but it's a good messy? And again, it goes back to that, how do you look at your church? How do you look at the individuals in your church? Are they people you love, even if you don't always agree with them? Are they people that you desire the best out of, even though they don't always do what they should have done? Are they people that you desire to see Christ fulfill their lives to their fullest, even though they're not living that life right now? We're called to be messy. We're called to be in each other's lives. We're called to be different. And we're called to be different for a reason. Sometimes it's to challenge. Sometimes it's to question. Sometimes it's just simply to be like steel on steel. We sharpen each other. We need to make sure that when we are differing of opinion, that we're doing it in love. That we're not doing it out of anxiety. That we're not doing it out of hate. That we're not doing it out of the fact that, you know, there goes so-and-so again. You know how wrong they always are. You know, imagine for a moment that someone decided that, you know, we're talking about remodeling up here. I would like to paint this sanctuary bright fluorescent red. Wouldn't that be pretty? Now, somebody out there is thinking, that is the stupidest idea I have ever heard of. In fact, maybe most of you are thinking that, which might be valid. Rather than just go, Rick, I've known you for a long time. You've come up with some stupid ideas in the past, but that is probably the stupidest idea you've ever come up with. You could do that, and you might be right. That might be the stupidest idea I've ever come up with, but I'm working on more. What if you ask instead, Rick, why would you want to do such a crazy thing? And maybe crazy isn't the right thing to say. But ask, Rick, why do you want to do that? Rick might respond, well, I want to make the place more warm. I want to be in a building that says, praise God. It invigorates me when I walk in, that it's warm and it's welcoming. Now, is there anyone in there that disagrees with that philosophy? No, I think all of you would agree with that attitude. You just want to keep me away from the paint store because I'm not safe by myself in a paint store. Look at the intent of the heart. When we disagree, when we tend to have those differences of opinions, look at the heart of the person and the disagreement that you're having. Does it reflect something else? Don't necessarily take the surface. No, painting this sanctuary bright fluorescent red will never be a good idea. And no one will ever agree with me on that. And I'm kind of thankful for that fact. Because there's just a few weirdos like me, and you know, we're usually in pretty well controlled. We're especially never allowed to go to paint stores by ourselves. Laura will never let me go to a paint store by myself for that very reason. We as Christians have to recognize our differences. We as Christians have to recognize that we will differ. It's how we differ, how we act when we differ, that will define us as true Christians or that group of hypocrites that Frank doesn't want to go to. Folks, I want messy churches. The bad messy will always be there. You'll never be in a church where somebody doesn't say the wrong thing that's offensive or cruel or inappropriate. It's never going to happen because that's what people do, whether they intend to or not. We can't get rid of that. What we can change is what we do with it when it happens. What we can change is our attitude and how we react and how we treat each other. I want a messy church that's full of love because loving churches are messy. They do have difference of opinions. They do have difference of ideas. And they do have differences on how things should be decorated. That doesn't make them good or bad Christians. It just makes them different. We as Christians are different for a reason. God's brought us together. We're to be compatible in our differences. We're to not be divisive. And that, my friends, is all I have to say for today. Thank you.